Well, it's great to be with you here today. I always love to come and visit you. And I really appreciated the songs we were singing this morning. Our songs that spoke to me. So thank you for that. Today the topic is evangelizing other religions. And I thought there may actually be some people who are just visiting today. You may not be a Christian or you may be investigating Christianity. And so I just wanted to speak to you, first of all, as to what we're talking about when we say evangelizing other religions. Why is it that Christians evangelize? And the word evangelize means to share the message of Christianity with others. Well, the reason why Christians do this, the reason why Christians are keen to share a message, to tell people and convince people of the message of Jesus, is because they think God is important. They think God is important in their lives, and God is important in the life of the world, and God is important in your life. That God has done something for us, that God has done something amazing for us in Jesus. Because of that, they want to tell people. They want to share the love of God with people. They want to warn people of the coming judgment of God that we need to be prepared for. And this message of salvation in Jesus is for everyone. And so this is why Christians want to share the gospel, not just with people in their own community, but people from other communities, people from other religions. And that's what I'm going to be thinking about today, sharing the gospel with other religions. Now, I have to start off by narrowing down where I want to go, because in many ways this is a very large topic. And it was great to hear from Paul how you're doing evangelism in different ways. And as we think about this one, it's a large topic because in many ways evangelism can cover a whole range of things. It can just be having a meaningful conversation with somebody from another religion. Actually taking the time to find out who they are and just having a meaningful relationship with that person. That's part of the evangelistic process, getting to know them. It can just be living the holy life in front of somebody. That's part of evangelism. And we could speak about the holy life and how to live that, but I won't be doing that today. When you start talking to other religions, some of these other religions have Christianity in mind in their religion. So Islam talks about Christianity a lot in the Quran. And so if you're going to talk to a Muslim, you may actually have to learn a lot of answers for Christianity. You may have to learn what's called apologetics, giving an answer to certain questions. I'm not going to be looking at that today, but that's another area that can come with evangelism. It's the type of thing that even with evangelism, we need to explain to our children when they're watching the news and seeing religions in the news, and they want to know, how does that fit into Christianity? How do we talk about these things? How do we understand their faith and our faith? How is it that we can say our faith is true and their faith is not true, or elements of their faith is not true? You see, that there's a lot of questions, aren't there? Now, I'm not going to be looking at why Islam or Buddhism is true or is not true. I'm not going to be looking at all the different apologetical answers you could give. You know, what are the issues that come up with Buddhists? What are the issues that come up with Muslims? That's a big topic on its own. My focus today is going to be on, how is it that we actually think about just sharing the gospel in terms of when we do come to that point of wanting to share the message, how should we do that? What are some guidelines? What are some of the principles that we should be thinking about? And I'm going to look at sort of the philosophical, atheistic religion just briefly. Then I'll look at Buddhism and Hinduism together. And then I'm going to look at Islam and Baha'i. And again, there's so many different issues that we could be looking at there. And I deal with these in other areas. But I just want to think today, how do we speak the message of Jesus to these people? Okay? So, one of the things when I thought of when I was preparing this talk was that a lot of our evangelism normally, as I look out amongst you here, in our context, I think is to nominal Christians or to people who are post-Christian. I think that's fair to say. Most of them have some nominal Christian background. They might have gone to a Christian school, or they were baptized as children, or their parents were baptized as children. And so for a lot of our evangelism, I think we can think of it as sort of basic evangelism is to the post-Christians and nominal Christians around us. But it's a real contrast, isn't it, that when you read the New Testament, it's nearly always to other religions. The New Testament's focus is to the other, to the group outside. So when we think of the book of Acts, we see the apostles of Jesus evangelizing Jews, Samaritans, magicians, followers of Zeus, Artemis, John the Baptist, and Stoic and other philosophers. That's sort of the bread and butter of the book of Acts. We don't see them really evangelizing nominal Christians, do we? The book of Acts is almost always to other Muslims. And when we look at these examples that are given in the book of Acts, that they provide us with a model that as Christians we take on board. And so when we think of evangelizing Jews today, we would most likely go to the book of Acts and look at how they do it in the book of Acts, see how the apostles did it. That will be some help, but obviously you're going to have to think about where Jews are at today. But what about the religions that aren't mentioned in the book of Acts, like Buddhism or Islam, which we don't actually see a model for us in the book of Acts? Well, we're going to think about that from some principles. Now, what I want to do is just to give, again, some general principles about talking to other religions, and then I'm going to look at those three particular areas, three particular religions that I said. The first is, and while I said I wasn't going to focus on these, I still need to say them, and that is, when you're talking to people from other religions, your life as a Christian is on display. Your life as a Christian is on display. I'm currently meeting up with a Hindu man, and we meet once a week, and he's a great man. He's welcomed me into his home, and he has been impressed just by the behaviour of Christians. It's been the behaviour of Christians that has made him want to read the Bible with me, and we read each week. I've actually got a book here that if you may like to read yourself, but I gave him this book. It's written by an Indian man, and it's talking about how the Bible and Christianity have shaped so much of the Western world in ways that cultures from outside of the West admire. And he traces this through and shows the influence that the Bible and Christianity have had on human rights and a whole range of issues. It's called The Book That Made Your World. So this is a Hindu man talking back to the Christian West. And so I gave this to my Indian friend to have a read of, so an Indian could speak to him. So your life is actually really important, how you live. You may think telling the truth that, you know, living the holy life is just between you and God. It's not just between you and God. It's between you and the world as well. Now, the manner of your speaking. Again, I'm just going to touch on those just very briefly. The manner of your speaking. When you're speaking to people from other religions, you need to show that you can listen and that you're not going to impose who they are on them. You don't know who they are. You don't know how much they take on board their religion. You don't even know what they think about their religion. I've met Muslims who have said to me that they don't believe God exists, but they still want to be called a Muslim. How does that work? I don't know, but it does for them. That's how they see it. I'm a Muslim, but just don't believe in God. That would seem crazy, but that's just the place they're at. You need to speak to them. You need to make use of resources that are available. I told you about this book, which is a great one. Coorong's got a whole range of books, and you need to be looking in the catalogues for saying, you know, well, what would be a good book for this person that I could give them? One of the ones that I found really helpful when talking to people from other religions have been videos. So have people seen the Fireproof video? Yeah, I gave this to a friend who she was a Muslim and became a Christian, and she lent it to all her Muslim friends, and they loved it. It went around all the community because it was the gospel in action in a marriage. And it spoke powerfully that the Muslims have a concept of marriage, And this demonstrated the gospel working itself out in a Christian marriage. And so this was a great tool for them. There was a man I was emailing, and you know 60 Minutes, those types of programs. He was one of these, I guess we could say, a ratbag Muslim convert. So he's a white convert to Islam, and would be seen as a ratbag one that they would put on the, you know, 60 Minutes type of journalism. And he gets up there and, you know, calls for the destruction of Australia and all those types of things. I was emailing him and you know, trying to evangelise him and get to know him. And so here's this guy who's very hard-line, the zeal of a convert. And I sent him a YouTube link to a song called In the Hands of God by, what's the name of the band? I've just forgotten it. It's the Newsboys. That's it. I was going to say I had boys in the title. The Newsboys is in there. I won't sing it. Only make you then not want to look at it. But, it's a great song about just God's hands, our lives being in God's hands. So here's this guy who was really radical and would write back all this really vitriolic stuff to me. I just sent him this link saying, watch this video. And he sent me back this half a page saying, music is haram in Islam. We shouldn't listen to it. Muhammad forbade music and Muslim reformers smash musical instruments. And so they're not to listen to it, but he said, but I love this song. And I've had two Muslim friends, one's a friend, that guy's more of an acquaintance. I've had two of them say to me that they tune in to Christian radio stations to listen to the songs about God, even though it's haram. They're not meant to do it. So this is a simple thing you can do. If there's a verse of the Bible you found inspiring, a Christian song, right? And I started off by saying that I found the songs here encouraging. Other religions will hear that and go, that's great. Invite them to church. I heard the gentleman who did the Lord's Supper for us, just being invited to church. I had a Muslim man come to church. He was touched just by coming to church and seeing what we did. It's a really easy way to invite. I have a whole range of people around at Christmas time from other religions for Christmas lunch. So I think I had about 11 Hindus there, the last one. It's great. It's great. When we're talking to other religions, there's a principle the Bible gives us in 1 Corinthians 9 where it talks about becoming all things to all men. And so we need to have that flexibility in our culture. When I'm talking to my Muslim friends, I won't go eating pig meat with them or something like that. But even though, you know, so there are some areas where I will adapt to their culture and I will try to find out as much about their culture that I can enjoy. I'll enjoy their food. I love talking to my friends from other religions about if they've come from another country. You know, what are the mountains? What are the rivers? Where do you go on holidays like in that place? What do you do over there? And just to find out about them, I try to take on board as much of their culture as I can. But at the same time, even though in Islamic culture music may be haram, I'll still give them Christian music. So I don't completely give in because I think the Christian music's a good thing. Or when they want me to call Muhammad the Prophet Muhammad. No, I just call him Muhammad. I don't call him the Prophet Muhammad. Or when they say to me, oh, if you're going to touch the Quran, you've got to wash your hands. I say, no, I'm not going to wash my hands, but I'll treat it with respect in the way that I treat things with respect. So that there are ways that we can adapt there. You know, we need to be speaking the truth. We need to be not compromising. We need to be not changing the message of the gospel, but making sure that we stick to the truth of the gospel. Now, there are just some general principles which I didn't particularly want to focus on, but I just need to name a little bit because they are part of what we need to do when we're talking to other religions. I think the other thing we need to realise about people of other religions is that there's a lot of nominalism in other religions. So you may say, I've learnt the Quran, therefore I know what a Muslim thinks. Well, whether or not they believe the Quran's a different story. They might hate the Quran, they might love the Quran, the most likely been nominally influenced by it. But, you know, which means a few things. So, because of nominalism across all religions, it means we're not to tell them who they are. You're not to tell them. So if they say, I'm a Muslim, you're not to say, well, this means you believe this. But it's a double-edged sword, because for a lot of them, they would want to say that they're a Muslim when they don't even believe most of what Islam teaches. And so in what sense should they be saying that about themselves? So you can't tell them who they are, but at the same time, you can still learn what Islam teaches, realising that they may or may not take it on board, and maybe, you know, they're being a little hypocritical in calling themselves by that name. Well, what I want to do now is to look at three examples. One more point. I want to outline now my general approach to talking to other religions. When we look at the book of Acts, we see that the apostles evangelized different groups in different ways, and we use those as a model for us. But what about those religions which aren't mentioned in the Bible? So Islam comes 600 years after Jesus. How do you approach talking to a Muslim? Because Muslims are not Jews. You know, in the book of Acts, we saw the apostle Paul, when he spoke to Jews, he went to the Old Testament, explained the Old Testament to the Jews and how Jesus fulfills it. When he spoke to the Gentiles, he said, idols do not represent God, but Jesus is the true representative of God. But what about Muslims who are not Jews and they're not Gentiles? They don't fit into either of those categories. If you try either of those approaches, it's not going to work. You've got to think of, you know, what is the approach for a Muslim? I think what we need to do is to look at what are some of the common themes that our religions have. For instance, how do you know things? How do you know things? What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to live the good life? What does it mean to be a person? See, you can ask the other religion, what does it mean to live a good life? On what basis does a Buddhist live a good life? What does it mean to be a good Buddhist? See, for us it means to live as the image of God, to reflect the glory of God in the world, to live as Christ. What does that mean for a Muslim who doesn't believe that we're in the image of God, who doesn't believe you can be like God at all? What does it mean for them to... See, it's not a bad question to ask them, is it? What does it mean to live the good life? What is sin? What is creation? See, for the Hindu and the Buddhist, creation is just distraction. It's all just diversity and distinctions, and you want to get away from everything back to the one. So it's a very different view of creation, because for us, creation is good. One of the lessons I had with my Hindu friend when we were reading, I started with him in Genesis chapter 1. And what he was struck by was creation is good. Because for them, creation's bad. You want to get away from creation. You want to stop being reincarnated and get out of this world. So you say you need to think through all these topics. I'm going to look at just a couple of topics for each of these in a moment. But how do you know things? What does it mean to be human? What is the good life? What is creation? There are topics like this, you know, what was ceremonies, if they're washing themselves and having ceremonial washings. What do those ceremonial washings point to? Buddhists have ceremonial washings. We don't just want to say they're wrong. We want to say, no, ceremonial washings are good. They're an elementary teaching, one of the shadows and copies that God gives that we need to be clean. So that's how I'm going to approach it. I'm going to look at themes, ideas that we both have, and look at how the Christian understanding of that can be used to explain the gospel. So the first one I want to look at, just very briefly, is when you're talking to the person, and I'll put them into a different religion, and that is the person who wants to take pride in science, the modern thinker, the one who wants to be free from any type of religion. And for them, what do they think about knowledge? What do they think about how you know things? Well, they think that science gives us all the knowledge we need. Science gives us all the knowledge we need. And so they will say that we want evidence and science rather than faith. Now, how do we interact with that as Christians? Well, I think that they've actually misrepresented the Christian position when they say that. Because Christianity is not just about faith. Knowing things in Christianity, it's our epistemology. How we know things is not just about faith. The Bible, it seems to me, has at least three different ways in which you know things. There are commands from God, in which you to hear those commands and just believe them, obey them. But there's also the whole book of Proverbs, which is all about observing things. And we see with Adam and Solomon, it's all about naming things and categorising things. Solomon, we're actually told, categorised animals and plants and gave them names and wrote books about these categories. And then, of course, there's another area that Christians, in which Christians know things, and that is we've got liberty. So you're free to wear different types of clothing. You're free to eat certain types of food. See, it's not just that Christians have just faith. God tells you to do absolutely everything. And then there's science. No, the whole scientific endeavour is actually part of Christianity. It's part of our wisdom. It's part of our observation. And I think we really need to challenge the atheist to say, are you saying that if something is not subject to your scrutiny, right? If something's not subject to your scrutiny, then it's irrelevant. If something's not subject to your scrutiny, then it's of no consequence. Because that's what they're saying. The new atheists are saying to us that if I can't hold it in my hand, if I can't do an experiment on it, if I can't have it contained within my mind, if it's not subject to my scrutiny, then it doesn't matter. Now, I think that's a very narrow view of the world. Because some things of the world, the way that we come to know people, is just through people telling us. Through our parents telling us, through people writing us letters, through, you know, this is how you learn about persons. And so this is where I think we engage the scientific mind. We challenge it at its understanding of knowledge, because the gospel, and this is where our evangelism comes in, the gospel says that, yes, you can know things by studying the world. This is what the Bible says. You can know things by studying the world, applying your thought. God has given you this endeavour. But there are some things you need God to make known to you. If you want to know who God is, if you want to know who I am, I need to tell you. I need to explain myself to you. It's the same with God. And if you think that just having, you know, whatever's not subject to me doesn't matter, well, I'm afraid you're wrong. And this is where I think we need to challenge the atheistic world. And this is how we bring the gospel to them, by saying there is more to know in this world than just what is subject to your scrutiny. So you see how I've taken a common area of another religion, knowledge, and in regarding the modern atheist, he takes pride in that, doesn't he? And so that's where we need to apply the gospel, to that area in which he takes pride, that he knows everything, that his knowledge is sufficient to work at what is necessary. And we need to say, no, your knowledge is not sufficient. There's more to the world than what's just subject to your scrutiny. Okay, what about Buddhism? And I'll put Buddhism and Hinduism together. Now, we'll have the first slide up here in a moment, so if we can get that ready. One of the problems in talking about Buddhism is that I think Buddhism has that cool feeling about it. You know, Buddhism's a bit cool, and you get converts to Buddhism, and it's got that cool feeling, and the Dalai Lama, you know, he's there with the Obama, and you know, it's got that coolness that comes with it. It seems to be very accepting of other religions, and in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. I think what's helpful with Buddhism is to actually understand what it is. And I thought it would be good for us to read some of Buddha's teachings. This is actually Buddha's famous sermon called the Sermon of Fires, and we're just going to read it now. And it's where he explains what he means by desires that we're trying to get away from. Let's look at the first of these. Monks, this is Buddha speaking, all is burning. And what is all that is burning? Monks, the eye is burning. Visible forms are burning. Visible consciousness is burning. Visible impression is burning. Also, whatever sensation, pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant nor painful, arises on account of the visual impression, that too is burning. Burning of what? Burning with the fire of craving, with the fire of hate, with the fire of delusion. I say it is burning with birth, aging and death, with sorrows and lamentation, and with pain and with griefs and despair. So here he is, he's talking about the things that you see. And everything that you see, whether it's good or bad, is some desire that's coming into you. And he goes on, it's a highly repetitive sermon where he says the same thing about everything you hear, everything you smell, everything you taste, everything you touch, everything you think. Everything that you perceive, everything that makes you a person and that your person experiences is burning. So what do you need to do? Well, we can have the next slide. Monks, a learned and noble disciple who sees things thus becomes dispassionate with regard to the eye, becomes dispassionate with regard to visible forms, becomes dispassionate with regard to the visual consciousness, becomes dispassionate with regard to the visual impression. Also, whatever sensation, pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant nor painful, arising on account of the visual impression, that with regard to that too, he becomes dispassionate. So you've got to be dispassionate, that is disengaged. This is how you reach oneness. This is the goal of Hinduism. Everything you see, hear, taste, touch, feel and think, you've got to be dispassionate to. Okay, we'll have the last slide. Being dispassionate, he becomes detached. Through detachment, he is liberated. When liberated, there is knowledge that he is liberated. Now, this is enlightenment. This is what they mean by enlightenment. And he knows. Birth is exhausted. The holy life has been lived. And what has been done is done. There is no more left to be done on that account. So, you see, in Buddhism, the journey is to the oneness, the singularity of the one. And everything in this world around us is diverse. And Buddhism really has no way of explaining this diversity. And so you're trying to get away from the diversity back to the one. And the way you do it is you need to be detached from everything that you see, everything that you think, everything that you taste, touch, smell and feel. Because all of those things distract you, don't they? And they identify you as a person, which makes you distinct from somebody else and stops you from being the one with everything else. Now, there's some big ideas there. Hopefully you can get the general idea. But this is dehumanizing. This is dehumanizing. Well, maybe not dehumanizing, depersonalizing. It's very interesting. If you look up some of the YouTube videos for the Dalai Lama, people ask him about, do I as a person come back in reincarnation? And it's no. Because you as a person is a distraction. And you're trying to get away from you as a person so that you can just have a knowledge of the one. Now, again, this is what, if you're talking to a Buddhist, again, how much a Buddhist will understand this, I don't know. And the Buddhist chaplain down at the university has never read, this is Buddha's number one sermon. The chaplain down there hasn't read this. So they may not have read it. But when I talk to Buddhists, I talk about the person and what it means to be a person. Because this is where the gospel intersects Buddhism. Because for us, God is a person. In fact, God is three persons in a loving, eternal relationship. For us, ultimate reality is not to get away from being a person, but to be in relationship with other persons. For them, ultimate reality is to get away from relationships, which are just a distraction. You see, you need to talk about that topic, because that's where the gospel engages with Buddhism, to say, what does it mean to be a person? Are you saying that you want to no longer be a person? And so as we explain the gospel and talk about Jesus, we talk about being a person, what it means to be a person, and how being a person is important. It's interesting that when you look at the Buddhist cultures in the world, they don't live like this, do they? When you actually go like to, because in Thailand, beautiful Thai food. Who enjoys Thai food? See, that's completely un-Buddhist. It's a Buddhist culture, but what they're meant to do is to eat food that that is bland, because if they enjoy it, that's a distraction from the one. But you look at Buddhist food. See, their culture actually doesn't reflect Buddhism, does it? And you look at the beautiful clothes that they have in the Buddhist cultures, you know, with all the ornate clothes that they use for their traditional clothing. That's not Buddhist. Buddhist is shaved head, bland food, wearing a monk's habit so that you can reach the one. So you see how that there's the theoretical Buddhism, which will wash into the other. But in practice, they actually want persons. In practice, that they actually want to love each other. They want to enjoy the goodness of God's creation. They don't see it as a bad thing. And so when you're explaining the gospel to Buddhists or Hindus, these are the types of things you want to be thinking about. What does it mean to be a person? I'll look at the last one now. I've gone for half an hour, so I need to finish up quickly. I want to look at Islam next. What's an overlapping area with us and Islam? So if we can have the next one for Islam. Here we go. This is the way that I talk to Muslims. The first is that Muslims have two beliefs that we need to be aware of. The first is that Muslims believe that they believe all the prophets. Has anyone ever heard a Muslim say to them, "We believe in Jesus"? Yep, that type of thing. Yeah, they'll say that. They'll meet you and they say, "We believe in Jesus. We love Jesus." And this is because within the Quran it talks about that they are required to believe all the prophets, and it talks about the stories of the prophets. The Quran only has what Muhammad wrote. It doesn't have the Bible. But the other thing they're taught is that the Bible's being corrupted. Has anyone heard that from a Muslim? One guy shaking his head, yeah, the Bible's being corrupted. So what it means is that, and again, see, what I'm trying to do here is I'm not trying to say do apologetics. I'm trying to say, how do you fashion the gospel to make sense to them? If someone truly believes that they believe all the prophets, and someone truly believes that the Bible's corrupted, how do you present the Bible to them? How do you present the gospel? Well, you need to present the gospel to a Muslim in such a way that it shows them they don't believe the prophets. You need to present the gospel in such a way it shows them they don't believe the prophets. So again, you're not doing apologetics, you're just presenting the gospel. But if you do it in such a way as it makes it clear that they don't believe the prophets, they'll hear you. I do this in my debates and they hear me very clearly. And you also need to be able to present the gospel in such a way that it shows the Bible's not corrupted. So you want to actually say, how do I present the gospel to answer the issues in these other religions? Now, they're not easy questions, are they? How do you present the gospel to show a Muslim they don't believe the prophets? How do you present the gospel to show the Bible hasn't been changed? Well, you can do it. So if we can have the next slide, please. And that's because while Muslims say they believe all the prophets, they actually only believe what Muhammad says about all the prophets. It's the same with the Baha'i religion. See, the Quran only contains what Muhammad said. It doesn't contain any of the books of the Bible. And when Muslims say to you they believe all the prophets, what they mean is they believe everything Muhammad said about the prophets. Now that's quite a different thing, isn't it? It's the same with the Baha'is. The Baha'is have got a temple up in town, and I meet Baha'is around the place, and they say, "We believe in Jesus," but they only believe what Baha'i Allah says about Jesus, what Baha'i Allah says about Muhammad, what Baha'i Allah says about everyone. Now, that's very different to us, because, see, what is the Bible? The Bible is actually not one book. The Bible actually contains the Torah, the books of the prophets, the Psalms, the books of the Gospel. Now, we're actually the ones who believe all the prophets, aren't we? We're the ones who actually read all the prophets. And so when I talk to a Muslim, the first thing I do is I explain what the Bible is. I say the Bible is all of the prophets. It contains the Torah, the books of the prophets, the Psalms, the Gospel. And what I believe about God comes from all of the prophets. So did Christians invent the idea of the image of God? No. It's all the way through, isn't it? Psalm 8, Genesis chapter 1, the visions of the Son of Man. Did Christians invent the fatherhood and the Son of God? Did Christians invent the Son of God? No, we didn't. Israel's called the Son of God. The King of Israel in 2 Samuel 7 is called the Son of God and God is his Father. Psalm 2 is all about the Son of God. Christians didn't invent the Son of God. Did Christians invent the idea that God dwells with his people? No, God dwelt with Adam. God dwelt with Israel. Right? We didn't invent that idea. Did Christians invent the idea that there is a priesthood who offers a sacrifice for sin? Did the Apostle Paul invent that at the Council of Nicaea? No. You know, Christianity is new, but it's not novel. It's new, but there's not novel. Jesus brings to a fulfillment all the themes that were there in all the other prophets. And so this is why I've got a Bible like this next one, if we can have this please. Next slide. This is the Bible I give to Muslims. And I'll put this on tables around the universities when I travel around the universities. And I tell you, they look at that cover. They have no idea what's in the Bible. And when they see that it's all the prophets, that speaks loud to them. Now, this is how I present the gospel to them. I'm not having to answer questions, but in doing this, I'm actually undermining their belief that they believe all the prophets. And then finally, if we can just go back to that other table there. You know what this does? When I show a Muslim this, this actually testifies that the Bible hasn't been changed. Isn't this amazing? Don't we actually have an amazing religion? That there is this unity of scripture over 1500 years. Christianity is not a new novel message that just was invented with the Apostle Paul. See, Islam is completely different. It says it believes all the prophets, but there's no image of God. There's no fatherhood or son of God. God doesn't dwell with his people. There's no priesthood. There's no sacrifice for sin. There's no story of redemption. But he claims to be one of the prophets, yet he doesn't have that. And so when I show Muslims that, that actually testifies that it hasn't been changed because it's different prophets, different languages, different locations, different times, one message. And so I don't have to do textual criticism. I don't have to do all this other stuff. I actually let the gospel itself explain that the Bible hasn't been changed. I let the gospel itself show that I believe all the prophets. Now, I'm a specialist in this area. And not all of us can do this. And so this is where, when it comes to talking to other religions, and I'm going to finish up now, when it comes to talking to other religions, there is the place for the specialist. There is the place for the specialist. And so this is what I've done with Islam. But I've made a system whereby you actually don't need to know anything about Islam to be able to talk to a Muslim. You just have to stop calling the Bible, call it the Torah, the prophets, the Psalms, and the Gospel. You do that, and it will change every conversation you have with a Muslim. You show them the unity of Scripture. Right? You don't need to know about Islam, because what we've done here is we've actually allowed the Gospel to go into Islam and then come back out and say, this is, you know, Paul presented the Gospel to Jews this way, to Gentiles that way. This is how you do it to Muslims. So we can actually learn about Christianity as we learn about how we share the Gospel with Muslims. So there is this place for the specialist as well. And so if you've got a Buddhist friend, you're going to have to find some, do a bit of research to find out, you know, what's the best way of sharing the Gospel with a Muslim. If you've got a Buddhist. If you've got a Muslim friend, you're going to have to figure out now what's some of the best ways of sharing the Gospel with them. I've tried to give you a very brief summary. I've told you some books and some videos, and it's the type of thing in many ways that we just need to be thinking about. You need to be thinking about your evangelism generally, even when it's with people who are just nominal Christians. But we need to be thinking about it as well when we're talking to people of other religions.